Good morning and welcome to this episode of The Hour. I'm excited to spend a little bit of time with everybody today, share what I've been learning, share some insights on the common questions we're getting from our coaching community, and also break down a game, a high school game that I went and watched in person last night, and some lessons that I learned from that as well. So excited to dive in and kick us off right away. Let's go ahead and get started. Actually, but before I do, one quick thing, a sincere thank you to all of you that have helped get Savvy Coaching to this point by either bringing myself in to work with your team, by investing in our systems that we put together and raising space and lock left, by investing in consulting. All those things have shown that there is a need for coaches and programs that want to develop and grow. And a lot of you have been, coaches have been in a relationship for many, many years. So when I first started Savvy Coaching and moved away from leading the basketball side of PGC basketball, it was just on my heart to serve coaches. I've been working with athletes for a very long time as a personal trainer and camp director. And I realized that, wow, if I can help coaches, I can really help the game. And so I've been doing this thing for 2 years and have found a like-minded kindred spirit in Mark Cassio, who has a similar heart for coaches and a ton to share. And so we decided to join forces under this Savvy Coaching brand. And we just launched this Grow member, this founding member offer. And the response has been awesome and humbling that people want to say, yeah, for the next year, we want to invest in you. And so I want to say a sincere thank you to all of you that have, because if you're listening to this, you're one of our Grow members. I want to say a sincere thank you for saying, hey, we think that Savvy can help me for the next year. And so we're committed, myself, Mark, Claire, the entire team, we're committed to doubling down and just doing everything we can to serve you. I know everyone's in the midst of their season right now. And that's why I want to transition into our lesson today. The principle is greatness. And I want to remind everyone that greatness takes time. I can't tell you the amount, it's many, of coaches that have sent film or asked specific questions about an opponent that they are playing tonight or tomorrow or this weekend. And how do we adjust to the thing that they do? And it's normal to be asking that question at this point because the games are starting to matter more. Many of you are starting to play against your toughest competition as you're moving into playoffs, or this is the team you have to beat to get seeded into playoffs. And so that is normal. Please don't take this as a negative about asking that question. But I do want to reiterate, greatness takes time. Between now and tonight, there is not much of a change you can actually make with your team. Between now and tomorrow, or now and this weekend, you can tweak, you can focus, you can choose what you're going to roll out there as your opening, like a chess master's opening or what your plan is, but you can't make moves you don't have. And you can't ask players to do things that they don't have the skill set for. Greatness takes time. And so the three actionable tips I'm going to share with you for what I've been learning in this book, which is aptly titled Greatness, is a reminder of everything that we are attempting to help you do at Savvy Coaching. So at the beginning of this book, and this is a book that is that basically goes through how this author, and why am I blanking on the author's name right now? Let me get it for us here. David Cook, thank you. How David Cook has helped high-performing athletes, sports teams, billionaire CEOs, how he's helped them achieve great things. It's the playbook to greatness. And at the very beginning of this book, he reminds us of three very important things, the three pillars of greatness. And these are three pillars of greatness, are things that we teach at Savvy in a little bit of a different way. So I'll remind you of this now. here's your three actionable tips to achieve greatness in any endeavor. And as I read this, they rang true. One, focus. Are you laser focused on where you're trying to go? Is that focus easily swayed or distracted? Or are you fully committed to that focus? Two, passion. How bad do you want to get there? Do you have the passion to consistently execute the plan that you're focused on for an extended period of time? If we don't have that passion, then we're not going to be in the gym as much as we need to. We're going to be easily distracted. We're going to be easily discouraged. Do you have the passion? And three, mental toughness. Do you have the mental skills needed to handle the adversity that you will encounter on your way to greatness? Okay, let's go ahead and dive in to a specific example. And I don't think I have my Tim Duncan picture up here behind me right now. But there's a story at the very beginning here about Tim Duncan in, I believe it's his second year. So Tim Duncan was a really good free throw shooter. And for whatever reason, he was going through a slump where he was shooting 50% from the free throw line. So Tim Cook was asked to come in with Tim Duncan. So Greg Popovich walked out of the room and said, do what you need to do. And so what they did was, and this is my reminder to you at this point in the season, what they did was, is they decided they aligned on a new focus, a new plan that they would execute for 10 games and then evaluate. 10 games is probably going to be close to 2.5 weeks. Then he asked for the commitment, the passion to execute the same plan regardless of the outcome over any one game or one practice for a total of 10 games. And then the willingness and the mental toughness to stay committed to that through the ups and the downs of the entire process. And well, here's what happened, all right? Over the course of the 10 games, there were ups and downs, but by the end, Tim Duncan was averaging over that 10-game process, crazy, 36 points, 21 rebounds, and went up to shooting 75% from the free throw line over those next 10 games. And the very next year, Tim Duncan was selected to the MVP. Now, the reason I share this with you is he didn't go and say, I'm going to give you a plan that's going to guarantee drastic success in this one very next game. He went through the three pillars. He's like, okay, can we align? Can we focus on a plan that over time will move us to where we want to go? One, can we stay focused on that one thing for a longer period of time? Coaches, right now, there are so many distractions that make us want to focus on one thing for this game and another thing for that game and another thing because this one player's in a shooting slump. Okay, focus is laser focus on executing the plan that will get us to where we want to go, not what we need to adjust to this opponent tonight. Two, passion. Passion, fire, commitment. Does your and your team have it so that you can continue to execute despite setbacks, despite distractions? Three, mental toughness. When adversity strikes, when I was working with a coach yesterday, when you shoot really poorly against the Pac-10 2-3 zone and lose by 11, do you have the ability to rebound from that adversity, know that your plan is good, and continue to execute it by developing shooters, playing in space, and trusting your process? Do you have the ability to overcome mental toughness? Because if that derails you and you throw everything that you're doing out the window and you start from zero, it's going to be really, really hard to build greatness over the long term. So that's the savvy principle that we're going to explore even more in detail as we answer questions, is greatness takes time. Hardwood grows slowly. It requires focus and a clear plan. It requires the passion to execute the plan over and over and over again daily without getting derailed or distracted. It requires the mental skills to handle the adversity that comes without losing the passion. Kobe Bryant actually was watching a video of him recently where he was talking, prior to him passing away, he was talking to his daughter Gigi because she wasn't the best player and on her team or in her class and was getting frustrated. And as he was coaching her, he said, "I wasn't the best player on my middle school team." Kobe Bryant, he said, "I looked around and made a commitment there as an eighth grader that I wanted to be the best. And I didn't know all the skills that I needed, but," he said, "it came down to a simple math problem. And the math problem was this: most players at the middle school level will spend 1 to 2 hours a day, 1 to 2 days a week pursuing greatness in basketball." He said, "So while I don't know exactly what to work on, and I might not be the most athletic or the strongest or even the smartest," he said, "one thing I can do is I can execute a plan." And his plan was he was going to spend 3 to 4 hours a day, 6 days a week. And he just looked around. They might be better than me right now, but over the course of 4 years, greatness takes time. Over the course of 4 years, if they're going 1 to 2 hours a day, 1 to 2 days a week, and I'm going 3 to 4 hours a day, 6 days a week, over time, I can't help but pass them up. But it's not going to happen in a week. It's not going to happen by Friday. It's not going to happen in a year even. And so he was sharing this with his daughter. He's like, "I guarantee you, if you execute the plan, focus, and you have the passion to do that thing over a long period of time, not getting distracted, and you have the mental skills that the adversity that comes along the way, getting cut, losing, getting injured, whatever, if you have the mental toughness to continue through the adversity over the course of time, 4 years, you will be great." And that was the formula that Kobe executed for greatness. And that's the encouragement I want to give to each coach that is watching this live or recorded, that it takes time. And for coaches, a lot of times the mental toughness to overcome the adversity is to not give up on their process when they lose one game. And I will transition into some notes that I took on a high school game yesterday that I hope is going to help you as well. As always, I would love to know, we do have a couple of live viewers here. I'd love to know who's listening live. You can drop your name in the chat box. And as always, if you do have a live question, we'd be more than happy to answer it. I've got a whole list of questions that have come in via email and chat today. Over the past week that I'll be getting to as well. But let's dive into some notes that I took in this live game last night, because I think that it's very indicative of most high school games across the country, as this was a high energy, competitive game between rivals, good teams, with a lot of pressure, and it was a really good game. I want to start out with a reminder: just because you wrote it on the board doesn't mean you can expect your team to execute it. A handful of times in the game last night, one of the two coaches, you could hear him across the entire gym. I was opposite the coaching, the bench. And I heard this multiple times, this coach yelling, "I wrote it on the board. Why aren't you doing it?" And actually, Claire was there with me. I turned to Claire and I said, "That is perfect." Because we've all said things or reacted to things in heated moments, coaches, that we wish we did back. I know I have as well. And so this isn't trying to bash this coach. It's only identifying a dominant belief in most coaches, is that when we write things on the board on the scout, or when we ask a player or our team to do something in the moment, we think that they should be able to execute it. That is an inaccurate expectation. You will only be able to execute the things that you have expected to be great at. do you have a clear, have you focused on this thing? Have you executed with passion over a long period of time? And are you willing to stick to getting good at that thing through the adversity that's going to inevitably come? You can't just write something on the board or try to throw in something new that you've never worked on in the midst of the game or for that for the opponent that night. Players are a product of their habits. Habits are what you're trying to build over the course of your season. Are your habits going to be strong enough to answer the questions that your opponent's going to throw at you? The first question, I'll go through these three questions right now, as these three questions all showed up in the game last night as well. I think these are the first three questions that your team's habits need to answer. Just mark this one here. The first three questions that your team's habits need to be able to answer are this. One, pressure. Does your team and do your players have the habits to answer the question of pressure? If you can't answer the question of pressure, every team will pressure you and you will lose. Two, rebounding. Do your team's habits answer the question of rebounding, whatever your rebounding system is? Do you execute it? If you can't rebound, you're going to lose the possession game. And it's really hard to make up for the possession game, the turnover, an offensive rebound possession game with just more efficient offense. Three, transition defense. Can you get matched up and into your scheme in transition with high communication, high energy? Those are the first three questions every team has to answer. And until you can answer those three questions, there's really no point in working on anything else. Most coaches on most teams spend too much time answering questions that don't really matter that much. And the coach yelling out last night, "I wrote it on the board, why aren't you doing it?" was indicating that he was not yet savvy in that area, was not yet wise, didn't have deep knowledge in that area. On the flip side of that as well, the opposing coach multiple times yelled after giving up three or four offensive rebounds on the possession, yelled box out. Yelling box out in the middle of the game will not make your team a better rebounding team. Because when a shot goes up, players aren't thinking, what did my coach yell at me 30 seconds ago? When a shot goes up, players are doing what they've always done. They are a product of their habits. And so can I handle pressure? What are our rebounding habits and what are our transition defense habits are the first three questions that you have to answer with one, a clear plan. And that's what we've attempted to do in all of our savvy systems is like we must have a clear plan first on handling pressure, second on rebounding, and third on transition defense so that we can get better at those things. And honestly, what your plan is in those three areas doesn't matter nearly as much as it being clear. You execute with passion. You have the passion to work on it every single day over and over again, even when you might be bored of it. And three, can you handle the adversity that's going to come when those plans break down to continue to work on it? Okay, I wanted to highlight that as the greatest example. I'll answer another one. I've had multiple coaches from different areas of the country, California, Idaho, Indiana, Texas, all reach out to me in the last week with problems against a zone. And the problems are the exact same thing. We can't score. We have one good player that can't get to the rim against the zone. And they're putting multiple bodies on these players. And our other players can't make shots. When I was playing in college, actually, that picture is over there as well. When I was playing in college, we were actually playing in the conference championship when it was going to the national tournament. And at halftime, we were down 8 or 10. They had a really good 3-2 zone that we were having a lot of trouble with, and we weren't making threes. And we were all arguing before our coach came into the locker room at halftime. We were all arguing because we were passionate. We wanted to win about what we needed to do in order to win the game. And our coach walks into chaos, bedlam, where like we're up in arms, certain players want the ball more, certain post players want the ball more, like all this stuff, we're arguing. And in that moment, I'll never forget. I mean, he used some very colorful language, screamed at us all to sit down. And he's like, do you want to effing win this game? We're like, yeah, I want to win this game. And he's like, here's the secret to beating the zone. We all lean in because he was a Hall of Fame coach, this old kind of like Yoda character. We all lean in. What's the secret? We need it. He said, make your effing shots. And then he left the thing. He left the locker room. And like, it really does come down to that. Like against the 2-3 zone, you can't X and O your way to layups. That's why they're playing the zone. You have to be able to knock down the open shots you're going to get from the outside. And so like all of our stress about like, how can we beat the zone is just make some shots. You start making some shots, you make enough shots, they're coming out of the zone, it opens up space, you can get to the rim. Like it's actually pretty simple. And so these coaches are like, man, we can't make shots. What do? What you do is make some shots. The same answer is like, oh, they're trapping us. We can't handle the pressure. What do? You don't X and O your way to beating pressure. Like pressure is basically saying your players are not skilled enough. They don't have enough vision. They're not strong enough for the basketball. They're not good enough ball handlers to handle us speeding them up. And so we're going to speed them up. Whereas they're like, if the team's going to pressure, you don't have to run offense. You don't have to X and O anything. They're willingly bringing two to the ball for you. So that when you make your pass, you have a 4-on-3 or a 3-on-2 numbers advantage in the full court or the half court, wherever they're trapping. Like if a team wants to pressure you and you're a good team, you're like, thank you. We're walking into layups and wide open three so that I happen to actually work for it. Like pressure is bad defense against good teams. And so that, you know, those are the two most common questions that I'm getting right now is like, how do we make more shots and how do we handle pressure? And the answer is always develop better players, which takes time, which takes one, a plan, two, passion to do it for a long period of time, to do it more, for more hours than other people, and three, the mental toughness to overcome the adversity, which is happening right now because your players aren't good enough to execute whatever it is that you're trying to execute. Okay, three other notes from the game last night that I hope do benefit you. If you have a star player or a player that's significantly better than the other players on your team, you are going to get box and one, or you are going to get a defense that massively overhelps. And you cannot attempt to adjust and respond your style of play within the confines of the game. One of the teams last night has a star player. Freshman girl that's averaging, like, she's top 4 in the country in points and assists as a freshman. And the other team decided to face guard her 94 feet and send 3 bodies on any time she drove and penetrated, 3 bodies to help and said, we're going to make you give up the basketball to these other players, and then we'll allow them to shoot wide open threes or get drives to the rim. That's what we're going to do. And you could tell that this team with the star point guard didn't have a plan to adjust, because what ended up happening was point guard just ended up kind of standing in the corner or standing up near the top of the key or running around and getting the basketball and attempting to drive against multiple bodies. And so dig your well before you're thirsty. If you know that you're going to face some sort of a massively overhelping defense, then you need to adjust early. Now, let me give you 3 ways that I would adjust so you can still utilize your best player and your star player when they are facing a box and one or a triangle and two. This would be true of any sort of overhelping defense. First idea is this. Play the opposite game. Chances are this opposing team hasn't played this defense a lot themselves either. They probably threw it in just for this game. And so they're going to execute this defensive scheme the best after dead ball situations. At the very start of the game, they're gonna be giving the most physicality and energy on this box at one. Coming out of timeouts when they're reminded off of dead ball situations and made free throws when their coaches reminding them what they're doing. That's when it's going to be at its best. So that is not when you want to try to give your greatest energy to attack it. The star point guard early in the game when they were dialed in on her was really, really trying to get the ball and attack and create, and was exhausting and frustrating her and the entire team. Whereas you want to kind of play possum a little bit, play the game of cat and mouse a little bit. Early in the game, get off the ball, allow other things to happen. Don't try to attack it. But inevitably, the opposing team, as the game goes on, is going to revert back to their habits as well, which did happen. And they're going to forget what they're supposed to do. They're not going to pick you up 9-4 feet. They're not going to deny you the basketball. They're not going to help as well. So early in the game, you want to kind of allow yourself to relax and start to be more aggressive to attack it later in the game. Two, a boxing one is going to be least organized and least effective in transition. And so your star player needs to actually put more energy into getting the outlet early and attacking early in transition before the defense is set. It's really hard to attack a boxing one or something like that once they are set. Third, turn the person that's being defended into an off-ball and on-ball screener. They weren't in a box of one. They were actually in a man with her face guarding her and then throwing massive help and just ignoring players when she got the basketball. And so especially against a defense like that, have something you can go to where whatever actions that you've already run and trained throughout your entire year, you just trend and make the person that's being face guarded, you turn them into their screener, whether it be an on-ball screener in your ghost or step-up action, or whether it be off-ball screener in your split game or in your pin game or whatever. I would even put them on the porch and make them a screener a little bit more, because they're not the person defending them, even though it's a smaller player, is not going to help at the rim. And you're going to open up a ton of space at the rim. Okay, that's lesson number one that I got from last night.